Yeah. Don't scare me. Jesus Christ. My name's Earl. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. Apparently, there's been a lot of drinking going on in the Sacramento area. I don't know, how many people are in here? We have no idea. We've lost count of our numbers. I want to thank the committee for asking me to share. It's always an honor and privilege to do so. I want to thank Mark for coming to get me at the airport, picking me up. I'm one of these guys that I just, you know, I flip to the week and it says, okay, you're leaving town, and I pack a bag and I get my ticket and I just get on a plane, and it's usually on the way here, on the way to wherever I'm going, that it occurs to me, I don't have any names or phone numbers or paperwork, or I mean, I'm just clueless. Where are you going? Sacramento. Who's picking you up? I don't know. Where's the conference? I don't know. Staying in a hotel? I guess so. I don't know. It's like being an astronaut, you know what I mean? You just land and you walk up and, like, there's a guy standing there with a sign with your name on, you know what I mean? And you see him and you're first, and he just thinks, you know, oh, hi, Earl. I'm looking at him like, thank God you're here, man. I don't know what the hell's going on. I want to thank all the speakers that I've listened to, and thank you for inviting me to the Spring Fling. It's an honor to be here. And I mean, I got here Friday and I listened to the, went and listened to the Friday night speaker. I went to an AA meeting when I landed. And it was amazing. And then got up this morning and went to the 10 o'clock meeting. The man threw down. Great. First speaker. What was her name? Megan? You here? Hey, you know what? If any of you guys missed that, you know, I rarely make sense, you know, but if you want to know, you want it in 10 minutes, you want to know what this thing is about, get that tape. Listen what that girl had to say, man, that was powerful. You know, the rest of this is just, the rest of us are just spring flinging around here, you know what I mean? That was right on the money. It was so great. She was done, and we, you know, so he got up and he just went, well, there it is, you know what I mean? It's amazing, you know, and you were great. Spicy. Yeah, I like that. Went to 2 o'clock, the 2 o'clock meeting. Man, unbelievable. So if you don't have, y'all should just get all those tapes. Right? The tape guy's over there going, yeah. So I guess we got to talk about me now. Oh. Me. I'm an alcoholic. I did not start drinking until I was 12. I held off as long as I possibly could, man. I was restless, irritable, and discontented for a long time prior to that, man. And I got shipped off to boarding school. I mean, I didn't even know I was going. My father just came in my room one day and said, get in the car. All right. Got in the car, drove, pulled up at this joint, right? I got out of the car. Nobody else got out of the car. My father put a suitcase down next to me and said, so make a man out of you. Got back in the car, and everybody drove off. I'm 12 years old, 5 feet tall, 103 pounds. I'm a child, man. I'm scared of my own shadow. And the journey began there, you know what I mean? After something, it was like something broke inside me. I said, you don't want me, I don't want you. And I turned my back on all that and got in a fight with the biggest guy in the school. I'm going to try to get sober as fast as I can. I think just based on the behavior I've seen here tonight, it's pretty clear if we're alcoholics. And I took this beating from the largest guy in the school, Tiny, right? Sure he was. I'm in the room waiting for my bleeding to stop, you know, and the word spreads around this campus. So I watch out for this little maniac Hightower kid. You know, he attacked Tiny. So I got this rep that has absolutely nothing to do with who I am, right? And the cool guys came around, and Matt came in and said, "Do you want to smoke a joint?" And I said, "Well, yes, I do." And I didn't even know what he was talking about, you know? All I heard was, "You want to hook up with us?" And the answer was, "Yeah, man, I'm alone in the universe." You know, sure. He could have said, "Look, we're going to go kill the Spanish teacher. Do you want to come?" I would have said, "Yeah, I'm with you." They got me in Latin. I'll kill the Spanish teacher. We picked up Steve, and Steve had a Tupperware container full of cheap red wine. Yeah. No grapes involved, red wine. Yeah. Cheap stuff, right? The fortified stuff, right? Yeah. Little mad dog, right? Man, winos up here, huh? Yeah. Right? So, you know, Matt's passed the joint around, and I took a hit and burned my lungs, and oh, man, you know. And then the wine came around, I took a pull on that, burned my stomach. It's like, oh, man, my life sucks. Like a week ago, I was living at home, I was fine. You know, now I got large, you know, I've been thrown away by my family. I got large people attacking me. I got knots all over my head. My lungs burning. My, you know, standing here with these two total strangers, two 13-year-olds and a 12-year-old. I mean, just children standing there. And all, but it happened. That thing that makes me bodily different from my fellows occurred. And I just got this thing wafted up over me, and suddenly I was comfortable standing where I was standing, doing what I was doing with the people I was doing it with. And I had never felt like that before in my life. And I didn't know what's, I don't know what's going on. I don't know if it's the pot, if it's the wine. It's the fact that I'm standing here with my two very close personal friends, Matt and Steve. Yeah, I'm feeling that, man. But the knots are going away. The self-centered fear has slipped away from me. Family doesn't want me. Screw them. I don't want them. Tiny got a problem? Bring it, Tiny. I'll give it another shot. Be happy to slam my face into your fists again. Lest we get the idea I had a shot there. And those were the humble beginnings. 13 was pills. The only reason I took a pill was because the guy said, "Would you like a couple of pills?" I said, "Yes, I would." Again, I have no idea what we're talking about. Take a couple of pills. 20 minutes later, I'm laying on the floor, and I'm very happy there. Floor is fine with me, man. Swings back around, said, "Anything I can get you?" I said, "No, bro. You know, just, what was that?" "I need a name." He said, "Well, that was Tuenol." Tuenol. You bet. Tuenol, I got strung out on Tuenol, Seconal, Placidil, all that stuff. I remember last time I kicked Placidil, like, you know, I couldn't even talk for like 10 days. They came, "How you doing?" "Hey, he's getting better, great." Fluoretine was psychedelics. The only reason I took a psychedelic is I was on a 10-hour pass with this girl named Debbie. Debbie was a bad girl. And an older woman. She's 15 and a half. Yeah. Yeah, Debbie changed a lot of things up for me. Whole new way of looking at life. And Debbie said, "Would you like to drop some acid?" And I said, "Well, yes, I would, Debbie." So she spun this lip, had this lipstick tube, and she spun it up, and there was a pill on the end of it, and I just took it through my mouth and swallowed it. To which, and Debbie said, "Did you just take that whole thing?" I said, "Well, yes, I did, Debbie. It was a very tiny pill." And she said, "That was three hits of white lightning." I said, "Okay." Well, the next 2 days were very interesting. I won't get into that, but just suffice it to say, to this day, for me to go into a supermarket is a real commitment. Because we went into one and it went terribly wrong. You know, we just take it for granted. Normies take it for granted, man. There's a lot of decisions to make in there. You know what I mean? I'm a guy that goes in with a list. If it ain't on the list, leave me out of that. I got it right down there. You seen the abandoned carts in markets? You drive along in there and you just see an abandoned cart, right? I understand that guy. You know, he just said, that's it. I'm coming back later, man. Way too much to think about in here. It's not humble beginnings. 15, I started shooting dope. The only reason I shot dope was I was on a boat in Marina Del Rey, California. A girl named Cammy walked up and said, "Do you like me to stick this in your body?" And I said, "Sure." And she did, and it was one of those shots where I just went, and as I was going down, man, all I was thinking was, man, if I'm not dead, I'm doing this again. Man, the fear just left me like that. It was just... Now, I'm talking about drugs, and I'm an alcoholic. I identify as an alcoholic. Now, I'm showing my respect. I'm a child of the 60s. We were very... Yeah, there's another one. There's a lot of us in here, lady. What the hell was I talking about? Well, there's your proof, right? That I'm from the 60s. Anyway, I talk about drugs. Child of the 60s, our parents were the alcoholics, you know what I mean? We weren't going to drink ourselves to death like our parents. We were carving out our own identity. You know, we're going to kill ourselves in a whole new way. I got to tell you, we were focused on the drugs. You know, when the drugs would come and go and come and go, my drug of choice is, what do you got? You know? I mean, it's all anti-oral medication to me. You know, if I get enough of what you got in my body, it'll kill the fear, and that's what it's all about for me. Now, I prefer to go down. I love alcohol, heroin, barbiturates. These are a few of my favorite things. This is what I like. But if you don't have that, I'll take a big bag of the cocaine. You can't go down? Let's go up. I like to go down. My idea of a good night is sitting around checking my pulse, you know? You know what I mean, man? I don't need friends. I don't need a television. I don't need a woman. I don't need a window. Because I'm shutting it down. Heart and lungs working, I'm good. Because I don't want to feel the fear, and it's the last thing I fear. I feel. If you want to go up, fine, let's go up. I'm fine. I'm fine. Let's drive the freeways decoding license plates. Sure. You know? Because the real point is, it's not about up or down. It's about, I got to get out of right here, right now. Because right here, right now, I'm self-centered, I'm afraid. Right here, right now, I'm comparing my insides to your outsides, and I'm losing every time. You know, it's just, life on life terms is just too tough for me, right? So, the drugs would come and go. There was only one thing that was on the table every single day, and that was alcohol. And it's just my opinion, but the reason alcohol was on the table every day is because drugs are completely unreliable. There's no quality control going on out there. You don't know what you got till you get it in you. You get yourself a fifth of Jack Daniels, you know what you got. Right? You get a quart of gin. Me and Mark were talking about gin on the way in from the airport. Tanqueray. Made me mean. And I'm not a mean guy. But Tanqueray? Whew. Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. So anyway, alcohol was a great equalizer. You could do so much cocaine, you can't get your mouth open anymore. Ugh. You know, you suck a little gin through your teeth, you loosen right up and go on with the party. You're all right. Ass will get a little too spooky, don't worry about it. Jack will get you back in the comfort zone. Just start sucking on that bottle, man. The greatest thing ever. 16, I started going to nut houses, dropped out of high school, started going to nut houses. Tried to escape, failed. You know what I mean? If they had green exit signs like they got here, I used to sit in that joint, taking my 3 cups of pills a day and shuffling around in there, and I think, well, that's it. That's what I want to do. Exit. And I was having all my meals with this girl named Kilday. Kilday was nuts, man. All you had to do to flip Kilday, we'd be sitting there having our little meal, and you'd look at Kilday and say, "Kilday, how you doing?" And Kilday, "You!" All the staff running after and tackling Kilday, right? So I used her as my diversion. You know, I flipped Kilday out and sent her off that way, and I'm sitting out, "Ready, ready, go!" And I'm hauling ass. That's all I got. That's a demoralizing moment, man. When you look down and realize, man, what's in those cup of pills? Because I'm rolling here, and it's just, I got two speeds, slow and stopped. Got the arms working, the whole thing, and over the loudspeaker from the nurse's station, you hear, "Ed, we're both trying to escape. Megan, a break for the door. You want to get him?" I mean, Ed's over there having a sandwich, and they're, you know, just like, "Yeah, I'll get him in a minute. He ain't going nowhere." Back to the room with no doorknob. But the second time I went in, I escaped the first day, and I hit the fence, and I made it, and I spent 3 years doing what you do on the street to get loaded on a daily basis. Met a girl when I was out there at a party. We talked for 20 minutes. It went well, so we were in love. And I went on an interview to a good business college up in Northern California, and I got accepted on the interview. We're talkers. You know, he was a musician. That's amazing. I am too. His favorite color was blue. We're going to get along, man. My favorite color is blue. And they said, "You'll be a fine addition to the campus in the fall." I didn't even have a high school diploma, and I just got accepted to college. Details. Went back to my father and said, "Look, give me a year's tuition for college. I got into business college. Don't ask. But give me a year's tuition and I'm out of town." He said, "Beautiful." Gave me a check, and me and Rosemary piled 8 pounds of hash and our belongings in the back of a truck and drove to Northern California to higher learning. And she got a straight job, and I became a drug dealer. And it was very easy for me to become a drug dealer. It was something I knew something about. And I had no morals. I had no ethics. I had no sense of family or community. I wasn't connected to anything or anybody. And I'm in college, and I'm studying marketing and production and distribution, and I'm applying these things to my business. Business is booming. I think college is cool, right? Got my GED. I've got everything all worked out. Everything's lined up. 20 years old, they found out I had malignant cancer. So I flew back to L.A., and they did major surgery on my upper back, and they prepared me to die, prepared my family for me to die. And I remember looking at them and thinking, you know, you don't even know who you're talking to, man. I mean, the way I'm living, dying, that comes up like twice a week. You know, I just wasn't in the game like everybody else. You know what I mean? I never saw that I've been here. I had a guy call me an alcoholic when I was 16 and a half years old. And I just looked at him like, you know, what's your point? You know? Yeah, but this is what I do. And the thing I have to remember and I have to acknowledge for me is in the beginning, it works. Alcohol worked great in the beginning for me. We killed the fear. I'd get up the next day and go on about my business. It was working. By the time I was 20, I was starting to overdose. I mean, I was really kind of starting to hit the wall at 20. And that's just not getting sober fast enough. I got to get sober. And blah, 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 blah. War story after war story. Plane crash, dead family, watched them all die. Hospitalizations, broken. I mean, by the time I came out of my last blackout, it was the day before my 28th birthday. So I was essentially 28 years old. I was 215 pounds. I was yellow. I had hair out like this and a beard out like this. I was psychotic, and I don't use the term loosely. I could not distinguish between the true and the false. I'd broken 74 bones. I had over 650 stitches in me. I'd been stabbed twice, shot at. The violence in my life had been insane. I was not connected to another human being on the face of the earth and hadn't been for a long time. If you said to me, you must be lonely, I would have looked at you like, well, I don't even know what you mean. Because I had nothing to compare it to. You know what I mean? You're lonely if you haven't been lonely, and then you're lonely, and that feels lonely in comparison to not feeling lonely. I've been alone so long, it just was where I was. I was dead inside. They were deciding whether or not to charge me with attempted murder. I mean, I just burned my life to the ground. I burned it to the ground and had become an animal. I became an animal, a wounded animal. I had pictures in my head that I knew I couldn't live with. I had no tools for living that worked. I had no idea how to be in the world. I burned it to the ground. There was no area of my life that I could look at and say, well, it's going pretty good over there. Let's focus on that. It was just wasteland. I came out of my last blackout. Both my hands were broken. And I had the moment of clarity that they talk about around here. And I realized, and my sponsor, years later, my sponsor said to me, as a matter of fact, it was on my fifth birthday. I took a cake when I was 5 years sober, and these guys threw my first AA birthday party for me. And I'd been to at least a meeting a day for the first 5 years. And I was being reflective. I was reflecting. Not flinging. I was reflecting. And I went to my sponsor and I said, I've had a pretty easy 5 years. And he laughed and he said, Earl, if you'd have known how sick you were when you got here, you wouldn't have bothered to come. That was the shape I was in. I was beat to the floor. And they took me by ambulance to this place and they pumped my stomach and said, get him out of here, he's going to die. And they took me to another place and kept me for 3 or 5 days. I don't know, I was out of it. Kept getting worse, and they took me by ambulance to another place down in Long Beach, California. And where I got sober was it was free beds. There was a thing called a short Doyle plan back then. And I got, there were 42 cots in one big room. There were 21 cots on each side of the room, and there were sheets drawn between the cots. And how you kicked was you got in your cot and you kicked. No meds, no making it nice. If you threw a seizure, if you bucked up out of the cot, which I did, they'd hit you with anticonvulsants and throw you back up in the cot. And you hung on. And it was like Dante's Inferno in there, man. You got 42 guys kicking like that at once. I mean, somebody's losing it every minute. You know what I mean? It was ugly. And I remember sitting in there, and there was the guy from Bruce that we were talking earlier, and there was the lady that ran that thing was a Dr. Vicky Fox. And she gave me my first direction. She was one of these women, human beings, that she walks in the room and everybody stops and turns and looks at her. Man, she had a power about her. She's from Georgia. She had hair piled up on top of her head with a pencil stuck in it. And she always wore this sweater and her glasses on a chain around her neck, you know what I mean? And she had a cigarette that stuck out of the corner of her mouth. She'd just stick it there and light it and leave it there. You know, she had ashes down this side of her sweater and piles under her arm, you know what I mean? She was something. And we're all in there kicking like animals, right? And she'd come blasting through the door and everybody just, And at one point, and she looked over at me, and I'm sitting in a chair at this point. I'm up in a chair. I've been there like 10 days, and I'm in a chair. I'm very proud of my sitting up, right? And she comes over to me, and she looks at me, and she put her hand on my cheek, and she said, baby, you really do need to be here. And what I heard was, stay. It was the one-word command, and I just looked at her and went, yeah. And I stayed there for 42 days, and I got out of there, and they told me, if you don't want to die, you better go to Alcoholics Anonymous, Earl, because that's the only place a guy like you has got a shot. My heart was swollen. My thyroid shut down. I couldn't touch my kidneys or my liver. I was just totaled, and I was crazy. And it ended up in the basement of a church on a Friday night to an 8:30 meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And I walked in the back door, and I got to tell you something. I did not come here because I wanted what you had. I had no idea what you had. I could not live another day with what I had. This was the unknown to me. And what had happened to me, what my bottom was, my fear of right now was greater than my fear of the unknown. So I walked into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I came in here with a head full of alcoholism. I had kicked. I had dealt with the lesser aspect of my disease. But the greater aspect of my disease, the obsession of the mind, how I thought about everything, was in full effect. And I came in, and I sat in the back, hair out like this, eyes bouncing around in my head, thinking I was all right. I walked in, and people went, ooh, that's not been going well there. And I sat in the back with my arms folded, with my best tough guy look on my face, mad dogging everybody. Do not come. You don't want to come talk to me. No, no. Turn away. Come over here. Because I'm looking where all the doors and the windows are. I'm sizing the joint up. I'm trying to look. I'm listening. I'm trying to find out who's got the juice in here. Because I'm going to slide up on you, burglarize your conversations. And when I find out what the hell's going on in A&A, I'm out. Because I don't join stuff. I get what you got. Got it. Looking at 12 steps. Done. Got that. Now what? And I was crazy. Filled with alcoholism. I had no alcohol in me. Filled with alcoholism. Guy got up and he shared his experience, strength, and hope. Old timer. And that was it for me. This guy got up and he talked openly and honestly about his feelings as a man, and I'd never heard anybody do that. Because he did it with this grace and this dignity that I'd never seen before. He was putting things together, a manner of being and certain information that in my world did not go together. And this guy was just effortlessly laying this stuff out. And the room was responding favorably to him, telling them the truth about his self-centered fear, how his head would, he'd wake up in the morning, his head chewing on him, and he'd take a shower, get dressed, and right, go to work, give him an honest day's work, get something to eat, go to an AA meeting. And he didn't go to an AA meeting, see what they had for him tonight, because he had worked the 12 steps as outlined in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. He had had a spiritual awakening as the result of doing those steps. He had been restored to sanity, soundness of mind. He'd been relieved of the obsession to drink and use. He was walking the earth a free man, no longer slave to alcohol and drugs, right? And now he went to AA meetings to be of service to the next man coming through the door. Ho! And I'm sitting in the back, and it's just cutting through all my defenses. And I'm thinking, you know, this old dog may be onto something. Because he feels like I would like to feel. And then it was like he looked right at me and he said, you know what, I don't care whether you like what I got to say or not. You don't like it, go to another meeting. I loved this. Because it made it clear to me this guy wasn't selling me something. He was sharing it with me. If I wanted it, I could have it. It was for free. And a thought went through my head that I have no explanation for other than a God that I don't understand. And it was, this thing's cool, I'm coming back. And at that moment, I had something. We've all had those moments where suddenly you have something you haven't had for so long. And you didn't even know you didn't have it till suddenly there it was again. And it's one of those moments in your life that changes you forever. I came here hopeless. I came here because I did not want to go back into the madness. And that man, that total stranger, gave me hope. I left my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous with hope. The greatest gift you can give to an alcoholic, in my opinion. Particularly of the hopeless variety. And I need a Kleenex. Committee, you've just fallen apart. There's not a Kleenex up here at all. I'm going to start wiping myself with flowers. I'm taking flowers from the... Thank you. Thank you. Man, wait, not the flowers. Get them. He's going for them. Anyway, I came back. I haven't left. Because I'm one of the real lucky ones. I got here flatlined. I got here destroyed. I didn't have any place else left to go. There wasn't any place else for me to go. If you'd have said to me, Earl, in A&A we go to a meeting a day, and they're from noon to midnight. They're 12 hours long. The truth was, okay, I don't have any scheduling conflicts. You know what I mean? I'm not in possession of a day runner. And I just kept coming back and going to meetings and listening to this stuff. And all you're throwing all these things at me. Things I hated when I was new was when they'd come up to you and they'd say, Earl, keep coming back. Earl, one day at a time, buddy. Or my favorite one, Earl, just turn it over, all right? All right, thanks. That's great. What the hell are these people talking about? I'm sure when I'm in my little one-room apartment I got now and I'm pacing, trying to get my 1 hour of sleep I'm getting these days, right? And I'm about to lose it, I'm sure that turn it over thing is going to come in real handy. Thank you. You know what? And if you're new and we do that to you, we start popping slogans at you left and right, all of which today have profound spiritual significance to me. Today. And they do that to you. I hope you have more courage than I did. Just step up to the plate and say, you know what? I don't understand the deep spiritual significance of just turn it over. Would you mind expanding on that for me a little bit? Because I'll tell you what. Where I got sober, if they were honest, about 75% of them would say, you know, I don't know what it means either. They just said it to me when I came in. I'm just saying it to you. I don't know what the hell that means. Sounds good, though, doesn't it? Yeah. There's a guy over there who reads the big book. Let's go ask him. Maybe he knows what the hell we're all talking about here. Oh, man, where am I? So, kept going to meetings. Kept going to those A&A meetings, slogans spinning around the room. Guys saying stuff that just hit me like an arrow through the heart. People say stuff and I just go, oh. All these pieces swimming around in my head. They said, you got to go to meetings every day. I said, I am going to meetings every day. By the time I'm 3 years sober, I'm going to 7 to 9 meetings a week, minimum. That's my minimums, 7 to 9 minimum. A lot of weeks, a lot more than that. I'm taking out 2 panels. Right? I'm not turning down AA requests. They said, get a sponsor. I said, what's a sponsor? They said, sponsor somebody who's got what you want. I said, well, I'd like to drink. You know, maybe it's a little early to be throwing the ball back in my court. You know what I mean? And I have since come to believe I want a sponsor who's got what he wants. That's a good definition of happiness, wanting what you've got. And it's not about I like his car or his woman or his clothes or his job. It's not about that. It's because this is an inside job. I got to go for the guy that's got the light in his eyes, the guy that's smiling, the guy that's being that is able and willing to avail himself to others, to be of service to others on a regular basis. That guy that's always showing up and got the smile for me and asks me how I'm doing. And it feels like when he asks me that, he really does want to know. He's completely outside himself, something I have. At that point in my life, I had had no experience with. I love when Bob said, and the only thing he really remembers really, really well about his childhood is him. I get that completely. Me too. You know, because it was never about anything but me. If we're talking about me, that's great. If we're talking about you, all I'm trying to figure out is what this has got to do with me. So I went and I got a sponsor. Weird set of circumstances. I'm going to get into it here. It was freakish how I ended up with this guy. But I ended up, the late, great Donald Madden was my sponsor. And I went to Donald Madden and I said, because this guy was bigger than life. He had this passion for living and this focus. And this guy was just in the day and in the moment and just going and doing it. Just this huge person. I mean, he was just amazing. And he was crazy. He'd been committed to 23 mental hospitals. The only guy I ever met got evicted from the nut house. Where they finally just said to him, you gotta go. If you don't go now, you're never gonna go. You're gonna be one of those guys we just take care of the rest of his life. Out. And they threw him out and he ended up in AA. 9 years later, I come walking in his office and I said, will you sponsor me? And he said, yes. And you don't have to like what I tell you and you don't have to think it's a good idea. You just have to do it. And when I asked him for help, I realized, again, one of those moments, that's the first time I'd asked somebody for something in a long, long time. And I just put my head down on the table and started to cry. I had a sponsor. I had a sponsor who clearly was the kind of guy who was perfectly happy to tell me the truth. Right? He was going to love me enough to tell me the truth. I could feel it. And when I laid my head down on the table to cry, he looked over at his assistant and he said, oh, wonderful, he's destroyed. And I looked up and I thought, what the hell does, I've made a mistake, man. This guy's had, and what he meant was, I was wiped out. Alcoholism had beaten me into a state of reasonableness. My ass was kicked. There was nothing in his way. He could just fill, I was an empty vessel, and he could just fill me up with AA, and there wasn't going to be anything in the way. So he thought. So he took me to his to this meeting, his Friday night meeting, and he said, they make 550 cups of coffee here every Friday night, and you're going to make it for the next year. And I said, the hell I am. I'm a mess over here, pal. Do you feel a little stress, a little tension on me? You feel that? That's the way I'm like, 24-7. It's always going. Not a happy man. I'm not a happy man. I'm going from victim to assassin. Victim to assassin. Just within seconds. It's seconds. Don't hurt me. Don't hurt me. I got to kill your whole family. I'm going in there. That's where I'm moving. That's where I'm living. Right? It's a very stressful time, and your solution for this is make a little coffee? I don't think you're following. And he said, fine, drink. I said, you see, there's no talking to you people. I'm trying to have a conversation, and you go right to the getting drunk thing. Fine, I'll make your coffee. He could have said to me, look, we don't give the new guys the grunt jobs, or, oh, we give guys a real gift around here when they first come in. We give them commitments in meetings where they get to demonstrate one of the most remarkable principles you will come across in the process of recovery. We are going to give you an opportunity to get out of yourself, Earl. It's all very clear to us that's never happened before. And we're going to give you an opportunity to get out of yourself and be a service to other people. And you will find that as this perspective, this new experience in life, as this builds and grows and grows and grows, you're going to become increasingly more comfortable. You're going to become increasingly more available to the only relationships you're ever going to be able to have, Earl. A relationship with God, a relationship with self, and a relationship with others. So knock yourself out. It's a great gift from us. He could have said that and just would have gone, boom. So he said, he spoke newcomerese to me. He said, do it or drink. And I went, got it. Go make the coffee. Right? So he was, and, you know, and I had one of the great sponsors because he was very kind and gentle and loving with me, but the message was very, very clear. And I started to say, you know, Donald, I got a thought on this. He'd go, oh. See, we appreciate you wanting to participate and all, but see, we don't want what you have. I thought, that's the most rude thing I've ever heard in my life. When you put it that way, it makes a lot of sense, but it's still rude. And he just, what he did was that he embodied Alcoholics Anonymous to me. He embodied what a life could be with a power greater than itself present in that life. What service could be. He is Alcoholics Anonymous to me. He was the only human being I trusted on this whole planet for the first 2.5 years I was sober. That man. I did everything that man told me to do. He saved my life. And I'll tell you why I'm here tonight. When I caught the buzz, he said to me, you caught this buzz. I can see it in you. He says, now I know you don't like to talk to anybody and you hate to fly because you've been in that plane crash and you saw everybody die and you got all broken up and you're terrified of flying. He said, you know, God does funny things with us in here. You're going to sponsor a lot of people and you're going to fly all over the place carrying the message Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, we need a drug test you because... And that's exactly what's happened. I'm here because Donald Madden said to me, I will give you every single thing that I have, and I will do it for free. All I ask of you is that when you catch this buzz, you immediately turn around and you give it away to that next guy coming into the rooms. And I said, deal. Yeah. It's been the greatest honor of my life to do just that. See, he didn't just teach me how to not drink, because this isn't about not drinking. That's not what this is about. This isn't about stopping drinking. This is about how do I stay stopped. How do I get free of the beast? How do I not go back into the madness? And I know for a guy like me, the only way that I can stay stopped is if I can get comfortable sober. And the only way I'm going to get comfortable sober is if I address the greater aspect of this disease, the obsession of my mind. I cannot walk around with that beast whispering in my ear all the time. Because it's not, I used to think you'd be in a meeting like this and all of a sudden your head just go, drink! And you just, well, shit, gotta go. No human defense, sorry, out the door. Right? And I'd be drunk. And it's not like that. The book says it's cunning, baffling, and powerful. Smooth. It smooths up on you. It comes up and it just says, how you doing, Earl? Now I'm at the Friday Night Ohio Street meeting. Am I doing my cleanup commitment? And my sponsor's standing right over there. I've just been in an AA meeting. Beast right there. Bold. How you doing, Earl? Listen, I know you're having a terrible, terrible day, and it's a terrible thing what's going on here. I mean, it's just terrible the way people are treating you all day. It's like you're walking around with a bullseye on your back, and you're getting shot every 5 minutes. The world's an ugly, cruel place, Earl. It's an ugly, cruel place, and I see you're very, very stressed out about it. And you know what? And you know what, Earl? This is a medical issue. You're very stressed out. And now here's what we're going to do. We're just going to go out, and we're just going to have a couple of drinks. Take it easy. We're just going to have a couple of drinks. Right? That's all we're going to do, and I'm going to be there for you. I'm here for you. I love you. You know I love you. I'm always here for you. And we're going to do this just you and me. And you know what? And then we're going to slide right back in. No harm, no foul, bro. No harm, no foul. Don't worry about it. Right? And listen, let's just keep this between you and me. Yeah? And I'm standing there sweeping up in a meeting, looking at my sponsor, thinking, well, yeah. You know, sponsor picks up the new vibe I got going and yells across the room, Earl! What are you doing? Sweeping up. Where are you going after the meeting? Well, I was just talking to... Beast talking to me again, Donald. Yeah, we're all shocked to hear that, Earl. There's an all-night panel over at Cry Help. You and I will be going. That was Donald. I remember standing in the back of a meeting. 2.5 years sober, and I was done. Done. Couldn't take another step. Caving in on myself. Main speaker's up at the podium talking. Donald's looking around the room. Sees me standing in the back. Sees the look on my face. I'm going. All right? And he gets up and he walks up to the front of the room, walks over, taps the speaker on the shoulder, stops him right in the middle of his pitch. Says, excuse me. Gets up the microphone and he goes, Earl! I just... And I looked up and was like, whoa! And he said, we're having a meeting. And I said, right, all right. Now, there's 200 people in this meeting. Everybody's going, who the hell is Earl? Because I don't talk to anybody. All right, brings the speaker back and goes and sits down. I'm in the back of the room just thinking, man, this guy is on the ball. That's what he was like. And I talked to that man almost every day until the day he died. I was almost 14 years sober and he died and he broke my heart. Broke my heart. We were sitting there, a bunch of us waiting for him to come get the body, and I heard his voice, because I thought Donald Madden was dead, and I was heartbroken, and I heard his voice in my head say, you get a sponsor, you little shit. You can't be wandering around unattended. So I've gone without sponsorship for 3 hours since the day Donald Madden started sponsoring me. I have not been without sponsorship, and I defer to my sponsor at all times. Because that's the important thing for me to do. The information, the direction that I am asked to take is secondary to the fact that I remain willing to defer to that human being. And that's what I do. That's the reward and the victory for me, that I can defer to another man and do what he asks of me. And that's what I do. And along the way, we were going to all these meetings and going to take on all these panels and sponsoring these guys and speaking and doing all this stuff. Started getting a little squirrely and I walked up to an old timer and I said, listen. You know, it's over. Doing the deal. Get a little squirrely, you know? Seems to be a flaw in your program. He looks at me and he says, Earl, saw you come in. If you don't get a program, you're going to die. Get away from me. I said, what the hell are you talking about? He said, Earl, you're very involved in the fellowship. Vital to your recovery. Glad you're doing it. But the program is found in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I suggest you study that book as if your life depends upon it. Now get away from me. I said, fine. All right. You old bastard. Man, hey, I just realized I have three heads. And two of them are quite impressive. Oh, man. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. What can I tell you? So anyway, what the hell was I talking about again? Me and my friend Christopher got the big book. We got these tapes of all these big book guys, and we started following around the big book thumpers, the guys we'd been avoiding at all costs. And we would sit and they said, read the big book. Open it up. If there's black stuff, read it. When you're done reading it, go to the next page. Read the black stuff. And we're doing that. And what's amazing is we're doing that and we're going along and everyone, I mean, invariably, every time we sat down, I would say to Christopher, hey, you know that thing that they say in those meetings? Here it is. And there's more about that right here. It was absolutely amazing. And on and we walked through the 12 steps, and we're on about the ninth step. And my guys, I got my guys, they're working the steps now, and I'm keeping moving, because there's nothing like moving you through the steps when you got some guy's sponsor right behind you, right? What do you know about the fifth step? Call me tomorrow. You know? Oh, man, a lot of sleepless nights. A lot of sleepless nights. Round nine, Christopher says, listen, Earl, I've been trying, I need to talk to you. I said, what is it? He goes, you're freaking me out. I said, what the hell did I do? And he says, no, man, you are changing right in front of me. I said, you know, I've been thinking the same thing about you. I think there's something to this. And what happened was, I found out how you get comfortable sober here. See, there's this ancient spiritual symbol. It's a circle with a triangle in it. It stands for mind, body, and spirit brought together as a whole human being. And therein lies the balance I had sought my whole life and never had, drunk or sober. Drunk or sober. Unity's the body. I bring it here. I couldn't get sober, but we seem to be able to together. When I stay with you, I stay sober. The recovery's of the mind, the greater aspect of my disease. If I can't deal with the obsession of the mind, I can never get comfortable sober. And if I can't get comfortable sober, life on life's terms is going to happen, and I am a sitting duck. For all my efforts, without that peace, I'm a sitting duck. So I worked at 12 steps. Step one, what's the problem? Lack of power is my dilemma. If that's my problem, what's the solution? Step two, that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, soundness of mind, relieve me of the obsession to drink and use. With that information, I got to make a decision to do something about that, because this is a program of action. So in step three, I get down on my knees and I turn my will and my life over to the care of a God I don't understand. My understanding has been really quite unnecessary for the great majority of my growth. As I think the very nature of growth is that suddenly I understand something that at one time I did not. As a direct result of taking action contrary to my consciousness, my thinking, and my emotional condition, to feel one way and move another. It's an amazing thing. Then 4 through 9 is the action plan. 4 and 5 is me, 6 and 7 is God, and 8 and 9 is you. Nobody else to play with. 4 and 5 swallow large chunks of truth about myself. 6 and 7 hook it back up with God, asking God to remove the defects of character because I'll remove the wrong stuff. And if you're one of those people out there like me that is worried about this, I was afraid to do that because I thought that if God removed all my defects of character, I'd disappear. Because that's all I was. That doesn't happen. If you're new, it doesn't happen. All right? 8 and 9 is you. I'm very, very sorry. Here's your money. Back in the house. It's pretty simple. I don't got to give them the big, what a spiritual giant I've become. Wait till you get a load of this, you're going to love me bit. I don't got to do that. Right? 10, 11, and 12, keep me in the game. 10, me, 11, God, 12, you. Same stuff. I continue to take personal inventory, and when I'm wrong, promptly admit it. 11, I seek God through prayer and meditation. I pray for knowledge of his will for me and the power to carry that out. I meditate to quiet the mind so that when the answers come, I can hear them. Step 12, the third side of the triangle. Having had a spiritual awakening is the result of these steps. I can practice these principles and carry the message. I can be of service. How can I help? Not because I'm a good guy, because I don't want to die drunk. I can work. I can do this. So now I've been sober since November 6th, 1980. I've been sober for 23 years. Couldn't say, oh, you're just applauding yourselves, because I will guarantee you there's not one shred of As Earl Sees It in there that was of any value. It's all Alcoholics Anonymous, all of it. And I couldn't stay clean for a day. Couldn't do it for a day. Couldn't love and be loved. Couldn't be a part of a family. Couldn't be a part of a community. Couldn't be of service. Couldn't get out of myself and think about anybody else on any level whatsoever. Couldn't do it. And now all that's happening. I'm 51 years old. That's amazing. People let me go at 25 because they couldn't stand to watch it anymore. That's why I was alone. Oh, thanks. Nice woman. Bring water. So what it's like today? I'm a free man. I'm not a slave to drugs and alcohol. I don't even have a desire, let alone an obsession, to drink, and I haven't had it for years and years and years and years as a direct result of doing the things that we've been talking about tonight. It doesn't make me smart. It just makes me willing as a direct result of having been beaten into a state of reasonableness by alcoholism. That's me. I didn't get here because it was a good idea. I got here because it was the only shot left. Right? And what's happened is I'm a married man to somebody I know. I've been married before, man, but not to anybody I knew. It was, just seemed irrelevant, you know? And we've been together for almost 6 years, and she's a member of this fellowship. And every Wednesday night, there's a women's meeting in my house with her and her girls where they work through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous because I'm out of the house doing the same thing at somebody else's house. You know, we got a house. Legally. And we live in this house. Two things I want to say to you, then I'm going to shut up. We got this house, and this is like the most amazing thing that's ever happened to me in my life. We got this house. Homeowners. We move in. Nice little house. Got neighbors on either side. They don't have any idea. But we move in the house. No idea. Because I've learned how to walk among them and not freak them out. And we got a lawn. I didn't even think about that part, just house, got a house. And I'm walking around, I go, you know, we got this front lawn thing here, and there's like a hose thing over there on the house, and there's plants around, you know. And I'm looking up and down the block, and I'm thinking, okay, everybody got this stuff. You know, this seems we all be all doing this, right? And it all looks nice. I think, we better water this, because, you know, everybody else seems to be, it all looks nice. And you let your lawn die, it's like they know where the attic is, you know, right? Nice people, nice people, nice people, drug addicts. Nice people, nice people. Dead lawn out there, right? So I take the hose, and I got the hose out, and turn on the water, and I'm, you know, throwing some water around, right? Guy drives by, he sees man on lawn watering plants. That is not what's happening. Because I'm standing there, because apparently I have to do this, and I'm watering, all of a sudden the sun's coming through the sycamore trees on my street, and it's hitting the plants where the water is, and that kind of prismatic thing is going on with the dew on the plants, and I'm thinking, you know, this is kind of trippy. I'm kind of liking this feeling that's going on here, and all of a sudden it hits me, you know, plants, they're alive. They're living things, right? And that's just the green stuff that's always around. These are like living things. And I think to myself, back in college, I'm thinking, now, if I'm not mistaken, these plants are over here, and they're breathing in carbon dioxide, and they're breathing out oxygen. I, on the other hand, am standing right here with them, and I am breathing in the oxygen and out the carbon dioxide. It seems we got a little thing going here. things. We got a little connection working here. I like this. I'm catching a little buzz off of this. Oh, here's a little water for you, my brother. Here's a little water for you, my sister. I'm catching a buzz out there. I'm having a good time. I'm running the house telling my wife, baby, they're alive. And she used to me. She says, I know, darling, there's some more of your friends in the back. Why don't you go play with them? Like, yeah! I'm in the back, right? Now, a guy drives by, sees man on lawn watering plants. Now what's happening? There's an alcoholic standing on his front lawn catching a buzz with a few friends. That's what's going on. Now, you may have to water your lawn. I get to. Look, I was so dead inside when I got here that for me, an exciting evening was I heard a bullet go by. Because that was a life-threatening, crazy-ass experience, and I could feel that. I was so dead, I couldn't feel anything else. It took something like that for me to feel like I was alive. Now, because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I get to marvel in the ordinary. I can catch a buzz anywhere, anytime, any part of the day. It's all the world and all the life happening around me, and I don't live in my head anymore. Alcoholics Anonymous has drawn me out into the world, and I get to experience the world and life on life terms, and that's the most remarkable buzz there is. Remember when I told you for me it was up or down, but I couldn't be right here, right now? That's what this thing is all about. Getting between those, man. Right here, right now. Get in there. Because that's where life is. That's the only place I can love you. It's the only place I can be loved by you. It's the only place I can know any honor or dignity as a man. It's the only place I can find peace for a crazy, crazy, crazy driven alcoholic. I can find peace. But it has to be right here, right now. Real life, real time, now. The steps, the fellowship, that's what gave me this. And it gave it to me in the forms of other human beings. I sponsor Satan. I do. Louie. Louie's got a shaved head with red horns of hair shellacked up like that, like two horns on his head. He's got a devil's tail tattooed up his back, and he's got flames tattooed up his legs like he's standing in the fires of hell. And I'm speaking in a meeting one night, and Louie walks up to me and says, dude, you got to sponsor me. And I'm thinking, well, I'm a little worried about what I'm throwing out there that's got the devil wanting me to sponsor him. But okay. You know, Louie's got 11 years now. Louie is an amazing human being. Louie sponsors all kinds of these kids. These kids come tweaking in off of Hollywood Boulevard into the Midnight Madness meetings, and they're coming in 15, 16, 17 years old, and they're getting here just in time, like you said, just in time. And they come tweaking into those meetings, and they look around, and they go, holy shit, the devil got sober. They won't listen to me. They'll listen to him. And he slides up and says, how you doing, little bro? You don't ever have to drink again one day at a time if you don't want to, and I'll show you how. Let's get you a big book and let's get started. Makes me cry, right? And I got to remember, if you're new, you get your turn. You get your turn. You don't have to understand this. You don't have to get it right. You don't have to be good at it. You just got to come this way. I remember when I was brand new in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Please, I would drive up, and the inside of my head was, I found the meeting, it's a good meeting, good, found the meeting, park, okay, go in there, put the key in the seat, where should I sit? I'll sit next to the guy with the red coat, find your seat, sit in the meeting, good. The guy's up, he's talking about something, I have no idea what that guy said, he's down, here comes another guy, he's up, he rarely saw something, I don't know what the hell he's talking about, 12 things, there's 12 things in AA, 12 things in AA, 12 things, ABC, 12 things ABC, I didn't get a lot of that, there he goes, he's gone, but that was good, I got 12 things ABC, 12 things ABC, 12 things ABC, there's another guy, he's up, he's talking, I drank like that, I love that guy, all right, I'll be quiet, I love that guy though, that guy's very nice, I like that guy, he's down, I gotta talk to that guy, all right, they're talking some more, there's another guy, he's up, he's talking, they're passing the basket, what the, don't take the money. The basket is by, that's good, where are we going, we're smoking, we'll go in, how you doing, fine. They're ringing a bell, we're going back in, go back in, sit down. Okay, there's another guy, he's up, he's reading 12 things. Those aren't the same 12 things. 24 things ABC. He's down. Another guy's up, he's drinking, he drank. I did that. I felt like that. This guy's reading my mail, that's how I feel. This is amazing. The hell with that other guy, I gotta talk to that guy. That was absolutely amazing. We're up, it's over, we're up. They got me, we'll pray. Yeah, I know, pray. Okay, thanks, yeah, it's great. And I would leave, that was an AA meeting for me. That was... And if you're new, that's a successful AA meeting. Because I made it through and I cried all the way home and paced till I got my hour sleep and I got up and I went to work and I worked as hard as I could so I'd get tired enough to sit in my seat one more time. And you know what that turned into? A life beyond my wildest dreams. Do not underestimate the little victory. Hang on to the little victories. And the little victories are these. You feel like you don't want to go to a meeting and you go. You don't feel like calling your connection and you call your sponsor and you tell them the truth. The stuff you were taught out on that street to never do. That's what we do in here. And what you get is a life. And you come slowly this way. You just come on, man. You just come this way, right? And there's a buzz that will happen. You pay dearly. I got more respect for a 30-day chip than anything else that happens in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's an amazing thing to get to. You get that chip and you just get to bed sober that night and you win. We do this a day at a time and the process of recovery becomes the process of our lives. And we walk the earth free men and women. This is not, I mean, this goes so far past not drinking and using. This is a room full of dead people sitting up living lives, wrestling with concepts like honor and dignity and purpose and value and peace and things that are so desperately needed in this world. You think it's just this, it's small, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. It gets better or we'd all get loaded. It gets better, but you got to do your part. You got to come with us. You got to come stay with us. You got to be with us. Because this thing kills people. It kills us. But remember, and people think, man, so many people don't make it. So many people don't make it. You're right, man. A lot of people don't make it. But remember, you heard it here tonight. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. If you make your life about finding out what thoroughly means, you're going to be okay and you're going to catch a buzz beyond your wildest dreams. Peace.